Welcome to the Citizens for Health radio show on Building Fortunes Radio with your hosts Jim Turner and Peter Mingles. Make sure you check us out by clicking on the Citizens for Health radio show link on buildingfortunesradio.com. That's www.buildingfortunesradio.com. Citizens for Health provides over 100,000 supporters with consumer news, action alerts, and opportunities to take action. For nearly two decades, Citizens for Health has been a nonprofit pioneer in the natural health freedom movement. The Citizens for Health Education Foundation offers tools to inform the public of health issues and educate and influence policymakers. Jim Turner is here to spread the word about some of the most interesting topics that can affect your world. From the dangers of mislabeled or dangerous products to the questions and concerns of vaccines, you'll want to listen to Jim as he speaks on behalf of Citizens for Health. And now, on to our show with Jim Turner and Peter Mingles. Take it away, Peter.
Hello, everyone. Peter Mingles here. You're listening to us live on Building Fortunes Radio. That's www.buildingfortunesradio.com. For all those people listening in that want to figure out how to listen in live, they can go to buildingfortunesradio.com/live. So when we're doing our radio shows, just go to the internet, buildingfortunesradio.com/live, and you'll be able to listen in. If you want to call in, because some people are driving or whatever, and they can, it's 347-237-4097. Again, that's 347-237-4097. And as our Building Fortunes Radio listening audience continues to grow, I want to introduce you to a great man. His name is Jim Turner. Jim's an attorney over in Washington, D.C., has been an attorney for a really long time, was one of the original Ralph Nader Raiders, and all the people that are old enough to remember what that means have a certain appreciation for all of the stuff that that means, and for all those people that don't know what that means. Ralph Nader did some amazing things for consumers a long time ago with Jim's help, and a lot of really cool things have gone on. Now he's an attorney and working with an organization for a long time called Citizens for Health. Website is really great, citizens.org. Sign up for the newsletter. You get the action alerts and probably be notified of stuff that you need to know about that you probably didn't. So it sounds like Jim is on the road or on a cell phone, and we really cherish the time that he gives us on a Friday at noon. So, Jim, thanks for being here.
Hi. Good to be here, and I am in the car on the road.
Excellent. So we didn't get a chance to discuss what you wanted to talk about today, so I'll leave you with an open mic on the Friday, and then we can discuss some other things. There's plenty of stuff for us to talk about.
Well, the way I do it, you usually call me and say, what do you want to talk about? And I say, well, what do you have on your mind?
There we go. Okay.
Got anything on your mind?
I think we should just kind of finish up. I guess we made a little prediction towards the tail end of one of our last live radio shows about the Brett Kavanaugh thing. And it was really kind of interesting when we did our radio show, I guess it was 2 weeks ago, the Brett Kavanaugh thing was really kind of curious because there was going to be the testimony of what was going to go on. And we both were kind of concerned. When I say concerned, not that we had any dog in this fight, but kind of concerned that Brett Kavanaugh put himself in a box saying, I wasn't at that party. And I really thought that was it, that it was either going to nail him, like for whatever or not. And it seems like he's wiggling his way through this process, and I say that wiggling meaning like, oh my gosh, like anybody, this is like crazy. But it looks like they're going to go for a vote, and my prediction at this point is pretty safe to say I think he's going to be nominated into the Supreme Court. So let's continue on that thought if you wanted to, and I have some, you know, comments, if you will, about some of the things that I think have happened. But I'll love to hear your spin since you're in Washington, D.C., and might have a different flavor of what's going on with that.
Well, it's. I think you're pretty close to the facts at this point. It looks like it'll go through with about a 51-49 vote. There's still four unannounced votes, but I think three unannounced votes. But it looks like the two Republicans are definitely going to go, and I would suspect maybe the remaining Democrat will as well. But what I noticed the New York Times article today, decrying the whole mess, but one sentence in it really stuck out, and that is that we're in a very tight spot because if it goes through by one or two votes, there's going to be a whole lot of angry people, and if it fails by one or two votes, there's going to be a whole lot of angry people. And I think part of the reason for that is that our political process is kind of broken down a bit. We don't have the ability to actually come up with something that the vast majority of people will embrace. And we write quite a bit, my writing partner and I, Lori Chickering, who's a gold-plated conservative, having started out at the National Review, and he's also a Yale Law School graduate, but started out writing at the National Review, and close friends of William Buckley and Milton Friedman, worked with them a lot. He and I write something, we try to do it once a week, about transpartisan politics. The idea that that actually if our process can be made to work, we actually have a lot of agreement in our society. And unfortunately, there's not space right now in the structure. So I watched the hearing, and I saw Flake get up and walk across and tap Coons on the shoulder, and I said to myself, that's a transpartisan moment. They're going to try to cook something up. The reason for that is that politicians just do not like this kind of difficulty that we're in. It just doesn't sit well with them. And their professional skill is to be able to make these things not happen. But that's totally broken down in this process here. And I think going forward, Kavanaugh is going to have a tough time from here on out. I don't see, I mean, I've got 2,500 law professors have, you want to go into 2,500 law professors are protesting his elevation to the court. I think that the court's taken a pretty big hit here. Either way, I mean, if he gets on, it's going to be tough, and if he doesn't get on, it's going to be tough. Now, I think part of the reason for that is that we've got 21st century communicating tools trying to fit into 18th or 19th century systems, and it's not possible to bottle up information the way you used to be able to. Somebody, I just predict, somebody is going to take Dr. Ford over to the house that's in Brett Kavanaugh's calendar, and they're going to take her to the upstairs, and they're going to say, is this the place it happened? And whoever that somebody is, there'll be a big, huge argument about their credibility and so forth either way, and we're on, you know, going to be off and running again. This is not the system that we watched that used to really be good at pulling information out and using it has just been bypassed by all the other information sources, so that there's no way to bottle everything up. And the effort to do so, which is, I think, part of what was going on here, and I don't know, maybe the Democrats were bottling it up for the first 40 days or whatever it was that they had the letter and didn't release it. But this kind of information cannot be managed as it used to be. And the sooner everybody begins to understand that, and I mean everybody, I'm talking about the politicians, I'm talking about the media experts, I'm talking about the advertisers. I mean, it's fascinating to see how the NFL is having trouble. The system just does not bottle the information up. It bounces out there, and information has got its own force, its own power. And that power creates the kind of events that we've been watching. I mean, it's very possible that what we watched on the hearing on Friday, Thursday and Friday last week, was a clash between the 18th and 19th century on the one side, and maybe the 21st century on the other side. And I think it's going to continue to get more and more bumpy as we go forward. So that's my take on it. I don't think there's a good outcome here.
Yeah, no, I appreciate your insight. I find it fascinating, and you bring up some thoughts in my mind that I just wasn't even thinking about. You know, we have a president who's a reality TV president. Why in the world didn't he blindfold them, figure out where they're supposed to go, and then do it live? You know, we could have done it live. The ratings would have been great for CNN, you know? And we could have both blindfolded
right.
them and then had a body language expert and a polygraph guy sitting there somewhere close by, and we could actually do some voting. You know, why don't we all vote, whether we think they were telling the truth or not? This is just absolutely ridiculous. What is so sad, in my humble opinion, is the idea of watching the people that are governing, if you will, or responsible for governing our country get bogged down on all these things and say, oh my gosh, such, I'd use a Lindsey Graham term, such power hungry, and then I'll use my own term, absolutely insanely incompetent, absolutely self-serving, narcissistic people that are controlling. And then it's really easy for me to talk bad about them relative to those things and then say, but wait a minute. If I'm a typical American, I probably worked 4 months out of the year where all of my money just went to go pay the taxes for the money that these people are now controlling. What the heck? Like, what the heck? These, I would have never voted for these people to control my pocketbook, if you know what I mean. It's crazy. It's absolutely insane crazy. So I don't know. So I wish sometimes that 21st century didn't hit that 18th century, because otherwise I was oblivious to it. Like, I just didn't know any better, and I could stand when the national anthem was raised, you know, and put my head over the Pledge of Allegiance and think that, you know, God, in God we trust, and then just kind of go to sleep mentally and just live my life. So all this stuff really is not necessarily good. I think there's a lot of people that are messed up. Go for you.
Two things you said. First of all, taxation. Taxation's gone as a viable way of collecting money in terms of the future. The 21st century is not going to stand for this kind of it is an 18th, 19th century type thing, this idea of taxation. First of all, tariffs are the 19th century's engine. Income tax is the 20th century's. But both of those things try to take money off of the flow of the market and put it in the hands of government and do so using various kinds of moral and practical and policy arguments. You don't have to pay sales tax on food, for example, but you have to pay sales tax on, say, a yacht. There's all kinds of ways of trying to game the taxes and game the tariffs and getting buyouts and so forth. They do this by, you know, hiring lawyers, and the people who have the money to hire the lawyers don't pay their bills, whether it's tariffs or taxes. That's why we've been floating out this idea of a payment taken off of the flow of money in the marketplace, so that every dollar that goes through the marketplace, you take 6/10 of a penny out and you give it to governments to run their business. And that 6/10 of a penny actually generates more money for government than state, local, and federal taxes combined. And it eliminates over $1 billion a year of tax collection money, the cost of collecting the money for when you do taxation and tariffs and so forth. And if you eliminate the taxation system and put in together this, it's almost like an easy pass for gathering money for the government. A person who today pays $20,000 in taxes would pay something in the neighborhood of $100. And when I say pay, it would be just taken out as they spend money. It would pay about $100 out of their cash flow, or about $100 taken out of their cash flow, and it would create the resources necessary to do all the stuff that needs to be done, do the infrastructure, do the schools, whatever. This system is always talked about when the taxation debate comes up, but it's always a footnote over on the side. You know, go on Forbes magazine, and they'll give you 5 different plans for reforming the income tax, and then there'll be almost a little footnote saying, and then there's this other thing, which is the payments plan that's set up to sort of make it automatic. The idea, first of all, you wouldn't be spending 4 months of your year supporting government if you did it that way. And then secondly, you would have the ability to do a lot of the things that you don't have now. And all the politics that we have now would shift into whole new areas, and how you collect and distribute money would become less of a tool in forming national policy than actually whatever the ideas are that people are for and against when they start doing their policy. So, again, I'm telling you, that's a 21st century impact on the 19th century system of taxation, 19th and early 20th. It was about 1912 that the income tax came in. But you know, you can't collect enough taxes to run the world that has emerged. I mean, hundreds of billions of dollars are flowing, we've got roughly a $20 trillion economy in the U.S., and we have a tiny smidgen of that to try to manage the whole thing. I just noticed there was a study done recently, I read in the paper this morning, that said that the super rich class, the ones that's not the rich class but the super rich, actually avoid about 25% of the taxes they should be paying. That's not tax avoidance. They avoid a lot of taxes. That's all legal. But it's the actual illegal non-payment of taxes, about 25% of that crowd. And what's interesting is all through history this has been true. Once you get to a certain level of power in the system, then you bend the system to your will. And then, you know, that's an issue that's going to be addressed, because, again, the 21st century is creating lots of those kind of people, and it's also creating lots of tools for altering the way that their power is managed. So all of that's, you know, kind of up in the air. Now look at the other side of what you said. You like to just go to NFL games and just, you know, relax and have a happy day. Well, there's the 21st century again with those guys protesting. And, you know, and it, whatever side you're on the protesting, you know, you got Trump and his pals screaming and yelling at the protesters, and the protesters doing their thing. And it's not the same old football game that it used to be. And what's really fascinating about the NFL is that it's losing fans and increasing the amount of money it makes. Understand, we're in a very strange world when you have fewer people watching football games than you used to, and they're making more money than they've ever made before. That tells you something about the way our system works, because it used to be that if you had, well, to some extent it used to be that if you had a lot of money, probably a lot of people were spending money in your venue. But now, it's strange to watch the number of people buying your things going down while the money that's being earned by you is going up. So anyway, I think it's
you know, that's an interesting point. I would have thought obviously just the opposite, because it defies logic. But do you know why that is? Is it just a concentration of people becoming more interested in, you know, the reinforcing the decisions? Or why is that, do you think, or do you know?
Well, I think my impression, and I'm going to dig into it a little bit more because I want to know a little more about it, but I think, first of all, they're running the prices up quite a bit. So prices are much more expensive now than they used to be. Secondly, I've been watching this, the promotion of let's just say, for example, the biggest income for the NFL is television programs. So they added Thursday Night Football. They added they have three games on Sunday. For a couple of games, this year, they had two games on Monday. They have Thursday night. Thursday night is a hugely lucrative for the NFL, going from zero to a whole lot of money. But that's all off of a smaller group of people, and there's also all of the NFL paraphernalia. Every time you buy a football shirt or a cup or any of that stuff, the NFL gets a little piece of that, and then they pull it all together and distribute it out to the teams. The teams also get money off of the things that they sell. And that's very tightly controlled. You can't just, you know, if you try to put something out that says NFL on it, they'll come in and talk to you to explain to you why you can't do that. So I think what they're doing is creating more lines of income. Washington team here is not a particularly good team for the last 10, 12, 15 years, but it's, I think, the second most lucrative team in the league. And they're I've noticed for the first time in being in Washington here, they're advertising games and advertising sales of tickets, and they're having a lot of trouble with fan dissatisfaction and so forth. But the money still keeps rolling in using all these different tools. They own the stadiums. They get money off the concessions and all of that. The really good business people get in there and they run that. And even though the number of people going to the games or watching the football things on TV seem to be flagging a bit, the money keeps going up. But again, I was just saying, you can look back in nostalgia and say, gosh, I wish I could, you know, go to, quietly to my football game and stay home and mind my own business. And, you know, I know I got to pay my taxes, but, I'll just hunker down. And hunkering down is getting harder and harder.
Yeah, that certainly seems to be the case. So is there anything that else is new? Sometimes you give us an update on what's happening with the homeopathy regulations or the nutritional supplement things. So is there anything new in those worlds?
Well, homeopathy is really bubbling along. I mean, they've got a lot of things happening there, and it's very, very important because it's a good way for individuals to have a direct match of what is best for their personal health at a relatively inexpensive cost, and something that should be one of the choices that we have. Most recently, one of the things that's emerging is that we have a very, very serious worldwide antibiotic crisis. The antibiotic resistance is spreading across the world massively and creating huge potential health problems. In fact, it looks like 2050 is going to be maybe 50% of the population will be resisting essentially all vaccines. That's the reservoir for things like all of the viral diseases coming out of Africa that we've had in the last few years. Homeopathy has an opportunity to help build your immune system in a way that resists antibiotic resistance. And so it's one of the things that's being presented to the FDA in its current questions about homeopathy. So I point this out only to say, if folks want to go to the FDA and look at that at the docket, lots of information is going into that docket. It's a good place to learn something about a different way of seeing how to help the body. Basically, there's a big debate, and again, it's one of these 19th and 21st century type debates. I've always asked myself, in the analysis of scientific analysis, if tuberculosis gets into a room and, 10% of the people who get it, or say 50% get it, and 50% don't, we spend 100% of our time trying to understand why the 50% got it and to do something about that. We spend virtually no time trying to understand, in fact, I would say no time, trying to understand why the group that didn't get it didn't get it. And as a result, there's a whole fruitful area of potential research that is being underfunded at this point. I mean, there are about 4,000 or 5,000 research studies on homeopathy, for example. But one of the things that's happening is looking for things that build the immune system, that actually cause the immune system to strengthen itself and also reinforces other ways that the body protects itself. It's interesting that when you get a fever, that's a protective mechanism. And so if your fever's, relatively low, that is like under 102 or something, you should probably just go with it because it's helping to fight whatever it is that's invading your system. Our tendency is to go try to get rid of that fever. I only point this out that, again, there's a whole bunch of stuff going on where we're learning more and more about how healthy people actually live and how they actually create a situation that causes them not to be invaded by these diseases that are around us at all times. So at FDA, that's one of the debates that's going on in the homeopathic petition that's on the docket there. I think it would be good for anybody out there looking into it, looking into health and so on, just take a look at that docket and look at homeopathy. It's kind of an interesting idea. I started out, and it looked good to me back in the 1970s, but what really got my attention because it was more organized was acupuncture. And when I started out looking at acupuncture, it was the idea of the acupuncture world was to mainstream acupuncture. Right at that point, from 1974 until 1996, acupuncture needles were illegal in the United States. They were technically illegal, and you could not bring them in. Lots of people snuck them in, but you couldn't bring them in. And then we got involved in a big big push for maybe it took from 1981 to 1996 to get acupuncture mainstreamed, and that's by getting laws through basically about 44 states legalizing acupuncture, and then getting the FDA to review and accept acupuncture needles. The system of acupuncture, again, builds the individual's own inherent or innate healing capacity. It works quite well. People are very happy when they find it and use it. And it has grown, and it's become very much mainstream in America. I knew it was mainstreamed when I saw a Budweiser ad that had a Budweiser bottle with acupuncture needles in it all over the place, and it said, "Acupuncture is this Bud's for you." I knew that acupuncture had gone mainstream at that point. The main point of the acupuncture story is that it reinforces the innate intelligence of the body, the innate intelligence of the ability of the body to heal itself. And so, again, this is something that is a 21st century unfolding that is clashing with the 19th century views. And what I'm saying in the transpartisan world is we need those views. If we can look at them and see that they're different and integrate them, that's what we saw at the Kavanaugh hearings when Jeff Flake got up and went over to Coons and said, step outside, let's talk. They were trying to integrate what they were seeing, because the facts that they were seeing were quite they made a picture. And how to make sense out of that picture was the task assigned to the members of the committee. The problem they had was that they were arguing about the pixels in the picture. They didn't argue about the picture that was being created. They didn't say, okay, here's a picture, now what do we do? They argued about the pixels in the picture, and then we got on. And so Blake said, let's go try something out, and what they tried to do was to strengthen the picture. And, we don't know what's happened, but it looks like Kavanaugh is going to be nominated, and then the battle that we saw in the committee, I think is very likely to continue afterward. Anyway, kind of rambled on there a little bit, Peter, but hope it was helpful and useful.
Great information. No, absolutely fantastic. Great information. So believe it or not, we're almost running out of time. So for those people that are listening in, you're listening to Jim Turner. You want to check out like literally all of the radio shows that we've done before. If you go to buildingfortunesradio.com/citizens, you'll be able to hear the previous radio shows that we've done before. And as you just heard, there's lessons in every radio show, whether it's the current events we're talking about or a little bit of history. And you're probably going to hear things that you weren't thinking about, or maybe hear things said or mentioned that you weren't really thinking about, because there's some stuff that I just wasn't thinking about relative to some of the comments that you made here. And all great stuff. So, Jim, is there anything else you want to bring up? Because I know it sounds like you're out and
not
about,
today.
And I appreciate your time.
Yeah, it's going to be it's going to be an interesting 45 days or so till the election, and it's going to really be interesting after the election. You know, it really. However, we don't have any idea. I don't think we have any idea how it's actually going to go. I mean, it could go in a lot of different directions, and after the smoke clears, we'll see where things are. And my view of elections is that the number one thing about an election is it's a way of telling us where we're at. So when we're done with the election, we'll know where we're at, and then we start moving forward. The agenda that I'm on, which is this natural health agenda and Citizens for Health is on, goes forward. Whoever's running the show, we go forward, and we, have the same troubles with FDA, whether it's Republicans or Democrats, because it's an administrative it's an administrative overreach, just generally, as I think most regulatory agencies are. And we want to get them back in the box and have them do what they can do well and stop doing what they do badly. So that's our goal there.
Absolutely.
We'll know more after November.
We're going to have plenty. Yeah, well, I know one thing for sure. We'll have plenty of things to talk about for sure. I think that both sides are just going to reinforce where they are, which means that we're going to have continuous fighting back and forth and nothing really getting done.
We keep arguing that there's actually three sides, and that about 70% of the public is just not interested in what these two teams are doing when they fight.
Right.
And that's what shows up in the election vote numbers. All right, well, thanks, Peter.
Hey, you're welcome. Thanks for being here. Yes, Seth, for everybody listening in, make sure you sign up for the newsletter on citizens.org. So, Jim, thanks for being here. And drive safe wherever you go. Catch you later, everyone. Thank you.
Thanks. Bye.
You've been listening to the Citizens for Health radio show, brought to you by Citizens for Health on buildingfortunesradio.com. with Jim Turner and Peter Mingles. Thanks for listening. For nearly two decades, Citizens for Health has been a nonprofit pioneer in the natural health freedom movement. Go to www.citizens.org to learn more and always listen in to Building Fortunes Radio, where our special host, Jim Turner, shares crucial information about many of the most important issues that affect your world. Citizens for Health provides over 100,000 supporters with consumer news, action alerts, and opportunities to take action. So listen in, get involved, and help spread the word. Be sure to check out the buildingfortunesradio.com website to hear more Citizens for Health segments with Jim Turner and Peter Mingle. And read about what's new on www.citizens.org. It's been our privilege to have you listen in. Jim Turner, Peter, and I want to say thanks for listening and ask you to go spread the word, tell a friend, join our newsletter, and go make a difference in your world.